Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Kristen's Corner. This is State Senator Kristen Phillips Hill. It's been a while since my last episode, but welcome back to my podcast where we talk state and local issues that are important to the residents of the 28th District. It's been a very busy summer with hearings traversing the Commonwealth to engage on issues ranging from the fiscal health of our Commonwealth, school property tax elimination, revitalization of our third-class cities like York, and how we can close Pennsylvania's digital divide. The last topic is the subject of public hearings that I'm chairing with the Senate Communications and Technology Committee. The committee has held three public hearings to date on the topic, and we've covered a lot of various issues surrounding what closing our state's digital divide will mean to various industries. We were in Indiana County, Monroe County, and Fayette County. Lack of access to high-speed internet affects our economic competitiveness, our health care, education, agriculture, public safety, and emergency response. And the list goes on and on. And that's why I'm very excited to welcome today's guest to the podcast, Palmer Chair of Telecommunications at Penn State University, Mr. Sasha Meinrath. For our listeners, Sasha is the state's go-to person on all things broadband and is hailed as a national expert who frequently testifies in front of Congress. Sasha, if you don't mind, can you give our listeners a quick snapshot of who you are, what you do at Penn State, and how you got involved in this issue of researching the topic to connect not just more Pennsylvanians, but more Americans to high-speed internet?
Sure thing. Thank you, Senator. It's a pleasure to be here. And this work that we're doing here in Pennsylvania is both because Pennsylvania is my home state now. I moved here 5 years ago from Washington, D.C., and I spent 10 years working in Washington, D.C. on this exact issue, on how do we bring broadband connectivity to all Americans. And prior to that, when I was living in central Illinois, I was building broadband networks for local communities. So I'm a practitioner, I'm a policy wonk, and for the last half decade, I've been a professor. It makes me an odd duck because I know both the inner workings of inside the Beltway policymaking. I know the technologies from having deployed them and the headaches associated with communities that have been struggling to bring high-speed connectivity to local residents. And I've witnessed as our official measures of broadband connectivity have more and more divided from the on-the-ground realities that residents across the whole country face. And so in 2009, a whole bunch of academics and researchers, a guy named Vint Cerf, who's known as one of the fathers of the internet, he helped build it in the first place, we all founded what was then a prototype, this measurement lab platform, in order to inform decision makers, to provide empirical data for informed decision making about the actual state of broadband connectivity. And over the last 10 years, this prototype has grown to become the largest open repository of broadband data on the planet. So we currently collect about 750,000 broadband tests a day from all across the United States. We have 20 petabytes of data, which is larger, I am certain, than the storage capacity of any of our listeners today. And long story short, in 2018, we collected 11 million tests from Pennsylvania, a quarter of a billion tests from across the United States, all documenting what broadband speeds do people actually receive in their homes, at their businesses, and how does that then compare with official measures of what should be available in those same locations?
That's incredible, and what I really love about your story and how you wound up as the Palmer Chair in Telecommunications is that you were in the field. Mm-hmm. You have that actual real-world experience that you've now built on, taken it into an academic realm, doing all this research, and that's really incredible because I think that a lot of listeners need to understand that there's a tremendous amount of work being done on this front. That, you know, the average person, we just can't conceive of what's going on behind the scenes. And of course, I think, you know, from a lot of end users' point of view, it's probably not going at the clip that they would like it to go at. But certainly, it's important and it's happening. You know, a few years ago, when I served in the House of Representatives, we started down the path of looking at this issue by forming the House Broadband Caucus, which I started with my good friend out in Greene County, Representative Pam Snyder. And, you know, when we first started, we were told that attempting to close the digital divide, you know, ladies, you are pursuing an issue that is a fool's errand. You know, you're never going to make anything happen. You know, it's just, it's crazy. We were undeterred. And, you know, back then, the Federal Communications Commission found that roughly 700,000 to 800,000 Pennsylvanians lacked access to high-speed internet. In my home county of York, about 25,000 of them were in York County. Now, you worked on a study that was commissioned by the Center for Rural Pennsylvania up at Penn State that showed that it was actually approximately 6 to 7 million Pennsylvanians who have not adopted high-speed broadband. Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate a little more on that study and why we have two very different numbers?
Yeah, and we do have two different numbers. One, the official metric, which says 700,000 Pennsylvanians don't have access to high-speed internet. And then our on-the-ground data, which is showing that that is off by an order of magnitude, that it may be 7 million Pennsylvanians that don't have broadband in their homes. And the reason why this exists, this discrepancy, and a growing discrepancy at that, because we can look at historic data to show that these two numbers were closer together 5 years ago than they are today. The reason why this exists is because our official measures are, in essence, looking at the idealized state of broadband access, what is potentially available in communities, whereas we're looking at what are people actually receiving. Now, the reality is it's a lot more than 700,000 that don't have access to broadband connectivity. Pretty much all independent analyses are showing that, in essence, what we claim to be available in our official maps isn't necessarily available on the ground. And to give you one example, officially, the Federal Communications Commission states that 100% of Pennsylvania has access to broadband connectivity. So all I would need to do is find a single house that doesn't have broadband and can't get broadband, and I could say that number is wrong. Now, the fact is, when we started looking at this, when we started doing this research, we started hearing from people all across the state. There's no broadband. There's no broadband provider. No one will bring me broadband. There's no options. And all of that is obfuscated, is hidden by these official numbers. So I think it's really important to be looking at what is claimed to be available, in essence. What's the advertising claim of what should be available? But, you know, trust but verify, isn't that what Reagan said? And I think we need to do that with this as well. And we haven't, officially, we haven't verified that the information that's being provided and is a part of our official measures maps onto the on-the-ground lived experiences of residents all across the Commonwealth and all across the United States. And that's what our research begins to look into. And in many ways, what we find is shocking, but about 3/4 of the way through the year-long project, Microsoft also released their own analysis. And instead of showing, as the FCC was claiming, that like 20 million odd people didn't have access, they were saying it's closer to 160 million households without broadband. And all of a sudden, this outlier that was saying like questioning these official measures became far more normalized. Other people, completely independent of us, were finding the same phenomenon. And that is really important, that this is not some one-off analysis. More and more research findings are, in essence, locating the same problem, the same scope and scale of problem. And yet, at the beginning of September 2019, the FCC just issued a new report showing that the median speed in the United States is 60 megabits per second, which is faster than I can get even in state college, much less in almost any rural community across the United States.
It can get really technical and really wonky
very
quickly on this issue. But I think what you just said really helped people understand, you know, we need to know what speeds are. It's the difference between being able to compete in a global economy versus, you know, being back in the era of, you know, I call it you've got mail, where you heard that long hissing sound and then da-ding, 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 and yeah, up popped that little, you know, post box flag and says, you've got mail, right? And yep. And those of us who are old enough to remember that, remember how you could sit there and you could practically play a couple of card games on your computer while you were waiting to connect because mm-hmm. it took so long. So speed matters. It's time and money in so many for so many businesses, and it's so important to so many other sectors.
That's right.
Of our
and,
life.
And the world today, in some ways, we've made digital divides far worse. When everyone had a dial-up modem, and again, we had near universal telephone access because of a universal service mandate that we as a country decided was in the benefit of everyone to have. And so when we were connecting to the internet, you know, back in the ancient days of 20 years ago, it was far more equitable than it is today, because everyone who had a telephone, in essence, had the same capability of being connected at roughly the same speed to this new resource. Well, today it's not like that. Today, places that have access to high speed, to broadband connectivity, are at a greater advantage. And along with that, places that don't have access to broadband connectivity are at a greater disadvantage than at any time in the internet's history.
We talk a lot about how we can make Pennsylvania more competitive. Mm-hmm. We talk about regulatory reform. We talk about tax reform, but we also need to begin to talk about having the infrastructure that will make us successful. Mm-hmm. So from your research, where do you think that we rank as far as states are concerned in making high-speed broadband connectivity a priority? Where do we fit in across the United States?
Yeah, so one of the benefits of running the largest broadband measurement platform on the planet is I can definitively answer that question, which is that across the United States, we're doing okay. I think we're about 19th of all the states. And so that puts us ahead of quite a few. But when you look at Pennsylvania versus what I would consider sort of our peer states, the other northeastern seaboard states, I believe we're 9th out of 10th, which is to say we're kind of bringing up the rear on that. And why this matters is that there's something going on in Pennsylvania that separates us from states that sandwich us. And the question then is more of like, well, what did we get wrong that led to us kind of trailing our peers? And what did we get right in terms of at least pulling ahead of, you know, 60% of the other states? But I think looking at what's worked, not just nationally, but internationally, is an important first step. And that itself is predicated upon having good data. And so informed decision-making means not just saying there is an issue or a problem that we have to solve, but having the information necessary to figure out what are the pros and cons of different solutions. Right now, we're arguing about pros and cons without good data to base those assessments on. And the radical position, as it were, the radical position supported by both Democrats and Republicans who are experiencing a lack of broadband connectivity in their own backyards, has been we should collect accurate and precise information about the true state of the problem. That is what the Pennsylvania legislature has done over the past year. It's been eye-opening, to say the least. It doesn't solve the problem unto itself, but it provides a basis for making informed decisions about how we want to go about it, what's the extent of the problem, and hopefully we'll be able to measure the impact of potential solutions over time because we have these baseline data points.
Well, and I think that really wrapping our arms around the problem, quantifying the problem is essential before we make any decisions about how to address the problem and then trying to figure out what potential costs are. And you're right that good data leads to good decisions. You know, a lot of what we do here in the state capitol is we look at our challenges and we look at how other states have addressed similar challenges in order for us to move forward. Former Supreme Court Justice Brandeis called states the laboratories of democracy. So if we're looking at other states as laboratories, there's 18 that have done this much better than we have. What do you see working? What do you see not working in other states when it comes to connecting residents to high-speed broadband internet service?
So there are things that are within our control, like eliminating barriers to entry. There are things that are de facto outside of our control, having a densely populated geographic area. I would say let's focus on the things that are within our control, and let's look at what has worked, not just across the U.S., but on a global scale. Because, of course, in a global economy, we're not just competing amongst ourselves here. This has implications for our future economy as well. And in essence, there's a couple of key things that we've seen systematically again and again work extremely well. So one is more competitors in a market sector. We tend to get better services at more reasonable rates. Another one is more active government oversight and accountability. The problem really boils down to you can't pretend that we have meaningful competition and then don't need government intervention. It's got to be one or the other. And I'm fine, frankly, with either solution. But what we've kind of crafted over the years is this assessment that says everything is fine when it's not, and therefore we don't need to formulate a solution when we actually do. And in essence, that's what we're trying to get beyond now, is to say, look, we now have overwhelming evidence that there's a problem. How we solve it, frankly, is above my pay grade, right? I leave that complexity to you, Senator. But I do think that we have to be honest with ourselves about the true state of broadband competition, about the true state of broadband pricing, about the true state of broadband availability, so that we can formulate, I think, honest interventions to solve what has been a vexing problem over the last 20 years for the U.S.
Well, I love your thoughts on competition. I think competition in just about everything from, you know, healthcare to you know, any service that you seek definitely increases the quality and decreases the cost. And one thing that we continue to hear is how expensive the process of getting everyone connected will be. Mm-hmm. So can you talk at all about what you see in other states when it comes to the cost of deploying high-speed internet to more residents? How much of it is state-funded investment? How much of it is private sector? Do you see any good examples of public-private partnerships? What do you see as some examples of the best way to encourage deployment?
So much like, you know, the global environment, a rich and diverse ecosystem is the most resilient option. So there is no singular best way other than you really want a diversity of business models, funding options, different folks that are in this mix, because depending on your local community, depending on the literal topology of your area, depending on, you know, other assets and resources that may or may not be available to you, the business model may change. The technology certainly will change. The best option will be very different from one county to the next, from one state to the next, from one small community to the next. What I am for, and what has proven time and time to be the most successful option, is both encouraging whatever gets the job done, but also ensuring that you have, in essence, a robust array of players. And that's what, you know, here in Pennsylvania, we do have that, right, in some areas. But we pretend like that reality exists everywhere. And what we have found, again, to have been the most successful option is when we encourage, in essence, local communities to make the best decision on their own behalf. And this is where you see these progressive elements and these libertarian elements intertwining. And this dates back, for me, when we were doing Katrina response, restoring emergency communications, I had like anarchist hackers with good old boy libertarian folks hanging out, building stuff together, and for the most part, getting along great. Because this is an issue that cuts right across traditional divides. And here in Pennsylvania, we've got a number of networks that are located in places like Philly that are community-owned and operated. We've got the Tri-County Fiber Group up there in the north-central part of the state deploying cost-effective, incredibly speedy capacity. And I'm for, though, all of that, in addition to the, you know, the Verizons and Comcasts in this space as well. So what works? I mean, we can look historically at what works. The Universal Service Fund and the Universal Service mandates of the telephony era worked extremely well. And I would say, well, we should look at what, why that is and how, what's the modern equivalent. We know that not allowing a private entity, which in essence has a fiduciary responsibility to maximize profit. Mm-hmm. But if you set rules of the road that say you can't just cherry pick one area, you've got to serve an entire geographic region, which again, this is what had worked previously. And if we set kind of these normative assumptions, what does it mean to live in a 21st century society? Well, I would say it's very akin to prior eras where we created certain elements of living in a civil society, free basic education, universal road access, right? We put in place certain elements in order to enhance our national economy and state of well-being. And in the 21st century, connectivity is crucial. And we need to think of it in terms of a crucial resource. And we need to think of it not just in terms of the initial investment, which is going to be substantial, but in terms of the cost of our failure to deploy universal connectivity, which will be far greater.
Yeah. You talked about ensuring robust array of players, mm-hmm. you know, on the field. I have a lot of residents who complain that where they live, they're limited to one option for internet connection.
That's right.
And they dislike their provider either because of the cost or because it's not the speed they want or they can't get the reliability that they need. How much of this discussion is about connecting consumers to high-speed broadband compared to giving consumers options in their broadband providers?
So they are both fundamentally important. So once you address access, and again, we haven't come close to actually getting universal access in place, but once you address that, then you need to start looking at things like price, reliability, customer service. And these are all areas where the United States has been sorely behind the rest of the highly industrialized world. So this year, the Pennsylvania state legislature has asked us to do an assessment of broadband pricing. And that's important because it's the number one barrier after access, preventing people from adopting broadband connectivity. And sadly, the Federal Communications Commission has refused to collect pricing data. And I say refuse because we've been working for over 10 years in every single docket at the Federal Communications Commission saying you really need to collect pricing data. And last month they issued a new report and order that said we acknowledge that our existing maps are terrible, in essence, and we need to revamp them. But they still refuse to collect pricing data. So into that space, the Pennsylvania legislature is about to launch itself to the very forefront of collecting information for informed decision making, because we'll be, I believe, the first state, and certainly one of the first states, to investigate what are people actually paying. And that's so important. What our data is showing is a massive interaction between rural and urban environments, where even though they have access to the same speeds, people are adopting at wildly different rates. What I think is happening, what I'm hypothesizing, is that rural communities are paying more for the same service than urban communities. How much more? I don't know. But you could imagine if we started pricing, say, gasoline in the same rates. Anecdotally, we know that it can be markups of over 10,000%. So imagine if a gallon of gasoline all of a sudden was going for like $300 a gallon. There'd be like rioting in the streets. And yet that seems to be, that order of magnitude seems to be normative in the broadband pricing structures that in essence are targeting rural communities all across the state.
It's a fascinating comparison, and I will tell you, you're absolutely right. Pennsylvania has one of the highest gas taxes in the nation, and you are absolutely right. There would be rioting in the streets.
It's high, but not that high.
No. And, you know, we hear about the pricing often, and just having an understanding of where it is, I think, will be very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. And competition certainly can help with pricing, mm-hmm. Or reducing that cost to consumer. So,
at the best case scenario for the United States, the FCC's own data is showing that roughly 90-95% of the country has one or two providers. That's the best case scenario. Right, so in de facto, we're looking at a duopoly kind of situation, and it's probably not even that. And in that space, yes, like without any verification of what's actually happening, what are people actually paying, what speeds are actually available, yeah, consumers are literally paying the price, whatever that price is, it's being charged to them. And I think it's time that we investigate that. We look at what is happening in this space.
And it's always good to know that Pennsylvania is doing something on the forefront. You know, so often a great frustration is that we kind of tend to lean back and let other states go forward. And so to be on the cutting edge of something is exciting. Is there anything that stands out to you from efforts in other states that have made closing the digital divide a priority? You know, how are they doing it? What could we as Pennsylvania policymakers learn from them? Recently, the Chairman Brown, Dutrell, they just put out a regulation for comment on pole attachments. And, you know, one of the things that they had said is that utility companies have some issues with how pole attachments are done, municipalities, mm-hmm. and that all of the adjudication that would have to take place with companies who want to utilize those poles would have to go through the FCC. They're talking about bringing that process up here to the PUC so that they don't, folks from Pennsylvania don't have to duke it out down in Washington, D.C. They can
right.
they can have their concerns addressed here in the Commonwealth. You know, what are some of the other things that are going on in other states that we can learn from?
Yeah, so pole attachments, which is a kind of an esoteric and wonky issue, but critically important because often that is the only way to bring connectivity into an area, and these poles are often a monopoly. One company or entity, whether a municipality or private, owns them and often seeks what I would declare to be exorbitant rates for putting a new wire up on that pole. And that is a real barrier to bringing connectivity to a number of many communities. Now, how one addresses that becomes very complicated. I don't want to trample on the home rule rights of a local community. I also want to ensure that everyone has access to broadband, and this is a key tension point in many ways. But the first step is getting good data. What are the costs associated with these pole attachments? Where are these poles located? Who has access to them? Who doesn't? All of that information is kind of missing from the debate. And so it's almost like, yes, this is a problem. We know that anecdotally. We don't know it through systematic empirical study. And that's a problem that we need to solve. It's a problem that we'd worked on back in 2006, so over a dozen years ago. And it's still being debated by policymakers at the federal level. So yes, I would say Pennsylvania taking charge of this issue would probably end up being the faster mechanism for bringing affordable broadband connectivity to the Commonwealth. And so I would encourage that while we wait for national standards that Pennsylvania move forward. Now, there's a number of other things that a lot of states are doing, and I mean both states within the U.S. and nation states around the globe. Oftentimes you'll see demand aggregation where they say, look, you can't just pick and choose the most profit-maximizing area. If you want to serve this city, you've got to serve the surrounding area as well. And through simple mechanisms of saying, like, if you want to serve anywhere in this locale, you've got to serve everywhere in this locale, that's had a profoundly positive effect. It's had a profoundly positive effect previously when we were doing electrification, when we were doing telephony, and it would work very much similarly within the broadband connectivity realm. That's not even on the table, even though it's proven to be successful. Likewise, in much the same way that with almost every utility, we have some form of transparency of pricing structures, and therefore, in essence, know when something gets out of line, we don't collect that information. And so how could a public utilities commission know when there needs to be an investigation or an intervention? And so the first step would be, how do we get information about what people are actually paying? How do we know if somebody ends up getting screwed? How do we know if the rates are differential or discriminatory if we simply won't collect information in the first place? And so I'm trying to drive this notion of informed decision-making not being a radical position, but actually being a necessary, logical next step so that we can, in essence, have more honest debate about what the solutions should look like. So we can test to see, like, does this address that problem? I think Pennsylvania is extremely close. And I say that because the downside of a lot of this is that we have a lot of communities that have been underserved for a very long time all across the state. And so given that detriment, there is a solidarity that often will span, I think, as you and Senator Snyder exemplify, right? Span across traditional divides. That's a real opportunity for Pennsylvania.
Indeed it is. And I will say data-driven decision-making is the best decision-making. And then, you know, also, you know, when anything is done measuring the outcomes, you know, whatever we do, we need to have some sort of performance measures in there to assure that, you know, we're looking at whatever we do, is it being successful? Is it doing what we set out for it to do? And certainly the resolutions that we were able to pass through the Senate a couple months ago, hopefully will build the database that we have to make good decisions with policy moving forward.
And I've been working with a number of reporters over at the Wall Street Journal, and they've just come out this past month with analysis of actual broadband bills to customers. And they're finding wild discrepancies amongst neighbors that have the same service in the pricing of this vital resource. So you can imagine expanding that, systematically collecting information about this, which goes far beyond. We may be the vanguard, but what we're going to point out in our research is simply that, you know, we can only do so much without, you know, the kind of subpoena power of a state legislature to collect information to find out what's the on-the-ground reality actually look like. But when the Wall Street Journal looks at this and says, like, holy cow, these look like really distorted market pricing structures, I think that's a problem that is, at the very least, worth investigating.
So the message from Sasha Meinrath today is, if you receive broadband service and you think your bill is too high, call your provider, negotiate a better deal.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And in fact, what I always do when I have to contact my providers is, while I'm on wait, I file an FCC and a Federal Trade Commission consumer complaint. Because in filing that complaint, you guarantee that somebody from that company will take this seriously, and you will get to talk to a human, which often solves the problem in 1 minute, what will otherwise take an hour or 5 hours or 10 hours of your time if you don't file that complaint.
Great consumer advice. So for listeners who are interested in what you do, mm-hmm, and would like to check out your research, where can they find you online?
Well, I have a globally unique name, so Googling for me is very easy, but you can also point your browser to broadbandtest.us. That is our visualization site. It's where you can take the test. It's where you can find out a lot more. Or you can just find me at the Pennsylvania State University's Belisario College of Communication website. Just go to psu.edu, and I'm quite certain if you search for anything broadband, my name will pop up.
And that's Meinrath, Meinrath.
Indeed.
So thank you again, Sasha, for joining me for this discussion. I know we will be hearing from you later this month as you are set to testify at our final hearing on this topic on September 23rd at 10 a.m. And thanks to our listeners for checking out another episode of Kristen's Corner. This is Senator Kristen Phillips Hill. Thank you for tuning in. And for more information on this issue or any state-related issue, please visit my website at senatorkristen.com.